the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi, everyone. I am Paul Horn. I'm the lead financial planner for Financial Sense Wealth Management. Today, we're going to be talking about the different ways that you can maximize your employer's stock options.
And I'm Chris Prytower. Companies that offer stock to their employees seem to be making a smart move, and it can really help motivate employees. It allows those employees to benefit from the company's success. Paul, let's discuss the different ways that employers offer company stock to their employees.
Yeah, there's actually quite a number of ways that companies can offer stock to their employees. Really, if you look back to the 90s and early 2000s, it was actually quite common for companies to do this through 401ks, as their employer match was actually done with company stock. That was quite popular back then, but after Enron, things changed. Nowadays, the most common form is a stock purchase plan, where employees can buy the stock at a discounted rate. For key employees, though, there are additional options like an ESOP or stock options.
Now, you said key employees. That's an interesting statement. Who are these key employees?
For companies, the key employees can be a number of people. It doesn't have to be just your C-suite guys. Think your CEO, CFO. It's not just them. This can be anyone that provides value to a company and is really an integral part of the company's success. I've seen people ranging from head top engineers, salespeople, or even an important product manager.
Okay, now, I don't want to sound cynical, but I'm thinking there's got to be something in it for the company. Why do they seem to like stock options so much?
Well, for companies, obviously, they want to try and retain their top talent. Companies like to use stock options as a way to retain their top talent. And the benefit for them is it's not as much out of pocket. It's not a fixed expense like increasing a salary would be. And it is really a great retention tool given the vesting limitations to really help ensure that it incentivizes the employee, but helps them stay tied to the company as well.
Okay. Well, it just seems though that the average employee would just prefer to get a fatter paycheck. Why would employees like stock options over other forms of compensation?
Employees really should be excited when they do get stock options. There is great upside potential there, and there can be great tax advantages as well. Stock options should be a great motivator as an employee because it is something that can be used to help increase your personal wealth. Imagine how employees at Facebook or Amazon are currently feeling, at least for those that have stock options.
Now, Paul, we do have the option of explaining how options work. I doubt that many people understand the details of how these options work. And I know usually in this industry, not knowing can be a big problem. So let's explain how options work. And why is it important for people to maybe get advice and understand options? Is it pretty straightforward, Paul? Like, do you just receive the stock and then cash them out?
That's a great question, Chris. Stock options can be rather complex. Not every stock options plan is the same. So it's really important to understand the details of your specific stock plan and to understand the different opportunities there that are available to you. It goes beyond just exercising the stock option and cashing them out. There's more advanced strategies that can be used, such as a stock swap or doing what's called an exercise and sell the cover. Just too often I've seen individuals either cash them out or in some instances, not even take advantage of the options at all, and they've expired without any sort of value or any sort of benefit to them.
Now, Paul, I've heard that it's very common for people to cash out their options and send the proceeds to their favorite podcast co-hosts. But before our listeners rush out to do that, keep in mind doing so can incur tax penalties. Paul, it sounds like it's important to work with an advisor and an accountant to help quantify a tough dilemma like that.
Yeah, with stock options, it is really important to be proactive with advanced planning, sometimes looking years in advance with your planning around the stock options. But this proper planning can be done to help maximize an employee's wealth, provide proper diversification to make sure that they're not too concentrated in their employer's stock, and can be done in a way to help minimize the tax impact. Proper goals-based planning helps guide the process to create an effective strategy for your stock options.
So we know companies don't just give these out right away. Can you talk about the vesting period, Paul?
Yeah, typically the stocks can vest one of two ways. The most common example I've seen is a step vesting schedule, which is where a certain percentage of shares are given out over a number of years, typically that's over a five-year period. So for example, after year one, they'll get 20% of the shares. After year two, they'll get another 20%, and so on and so forth until the end of the fifth year where they get the final 20%. The other option that isn't utilized as much is what's called a cliff vesting, which is where there's a period of time, could be 1 to 3 years. Typically, it's in the three-year range from what I've seen. And at that point, then they get access to the share. So at that time, they have to wait a longer period. On the flip side, they do get 100% of the stock options after that waiting period. Restricted stock options, which we'll talk more about, they can have an additional vesting schedule tied to the performance.
Now, Paul, the average listener probably is not familiar with restricted stock units, but it's important because restricted stock units are the most common stock benefit provided to employees. And I do want listeners to know they're not on restriction because they've gotten in trouble. Restricted stock units, more commonly referred to as RSUs, they're straightforward because the employee is given these on a vesting schedule, as you just mentioned. The closing price for the stock on the day of vesting becomes the cost basis for the employee. The market price per shares is then taxable to the employee as income that year. Now, as I mentioned, this topic and restricted stock units can be foreign to many of our listeners. Paul, give our listeners an example of how this works.
Absolutely, Chris. So let's keep this rather simple. Let's say a client is given a grant for 1,000 shares of restricted stock units or RSUs over a five-year vesting period using a step vesting on October 1st. So what that would mean is at the end of year one on October 1st, 1 year later, that employee then receives 200 shares at the market price on that day. Let's say that the market price is $100 per share at that time. What that means is those 200 shares at $100 per share are now worth $20,000 to the employee. That's simply the 200 shares times the $100 share price. Up to this point, there's no tax consequences for the employee when the grant was given. However, now that these 200 shares have vested, this $20,000 becomes taxable as ordinary income to the employee. As a result, it can be a good idea to really treat RSUs as a cash bonus. And when those shares vest, to sell them, pay the applicable taxes, and then invest that money in a way that's going to provide better diversification.
So that's pretty straightforward, Paul. But what happens if the employee chooses to keep the RSUs after they've vested?
That is an excellent question. And that can at times be a great opportunity. I have actually seen where a couple of people I've worked with over the years where by keeping their RSUs, it's provided significant wealth where their stock for their company has outpaced the performance of the S&P 500. So what happens if they decide to keep the stock is their cost basis is that $20,000, which is the $100 per share on the 200 shares. And any gains then will be subject to short-term or long-term capital gains, depending on how long they decide to hold the stock. If they hold it for at least 12 calendar months, then it's subject to long-term capital gains tax rates.
Well, again, I don't want to sound cynical, but it sounds like RSUs might be best for the employer, not so much the employee.
You know, Chris, that really is a very interesting observation. I would tend to agree with that. Companies do tend to prefer using the RSUs given their simplicity. And as we mentioned before, there's less out of the pocket required for the employer.
Okay, well, moving on to more employee-friendly stock options, can you explain to our listeners how non-qualified stock options work?
Non-qualified stock options, more commonly referred to as NSOs, are more advantageous to employees from a tax perspective when you compare them versus RSUs. An NSO works on a similar vesting schedule to an RSU, but the key difference here is there's an exercise price associated with that NSO. And that exercise price is important for tax calculations and helps reduce the price that the employee pays for the stock and helps reduce tax implications.
Okay, well, it sounds like there's a lot more going on with the non-qualified stock options. But Paul, when do employees have to end up paying taxes on those?
Yeah, so for the NSOs, there's really two separate triggering events for taxes. The first taxable event occurs when the individual chooses to exercise the option. And then the second one is when they sell the underlying stock. So like an RSU, at the time of grant, there is not a triggering event for taxes. If you remember with RSUs, the taxable event is triggered at the time of vesting, where with an NSO, after any time after the time of vesting, the employee then can choose to trigger a taxable event and exercise his stock options. It's upon this exercise, what is taxable to them is sometimes referred to as the bargain element, but all that is the market value price per share minus that exercise price. That portion then becomes subject to income taxes. After they exercise, they can choose to sell the stock or hold it. And like before, if they choose to hold it, just any further gains is subject to long-term or short-term capital gains, depending on the holding period for the underlying stock.
Now, Paul, because this is such a meaty topic, let's do another example here for our listeners.
Sure. Again, let's assume that 1,000 shares are given to an employee with an exercise price of $60 per share using the same five-year vesting period on October 1st of each year. So after 18 months, let's say the client decides to exercise the 200 shares that have vested after that first year. And again, assume the market price is $100 per share. At this time, the employee then will have to pay income taxes on the compensation amount or that bargain element, which is $8,000. The calculation for this is simply that $100 market price minus the $60 exercise price. That gain of $40 per share times 200 shares equals the $8,000. After the exercise, then the employee, again, as we talked about before, has the option of selling the stock and taking the cash or holding the underlying stock and just paying future potential capital gains on that. Another important note on NSOs is there is an expiration date. So when that grant is given initially, the employee has to choose to exercise all the stock options by a specified date. If they don't, then they lose those stock options and they lose the underlying benefit.
Okay, so we've talked about two or three types of stock options. Can you explain how the last one, incentivized stock options, how those work?
Incentivized stock options, or ISOs, are a rare breed. For those lucky enough to have them, there's some great tax benefits, but if you are subject to AMT, they can actually be a huge headache and potentially a nightmare in some situations. Good news here, though, is that with the recent changes to the tax law, there's going to be fewer individuals subject to AMT in the future. So hopefully there won't be as many individuals subject to that AMT purgatory, making them even more attractive.
Well, that definitely sounds like an incentive. How does an individual take advantage of these lower taxes that you're talking about?
There are two important time periods that must be met when we're looking at the ISOs. The first is the sale of the stock must be done 2 years after the grant date and at least 1 year after they are exercised. So given the complexities with the ISO, it is really important to consider working with a professional like a tax accountant or a financial planner so that they can help you understand any potential AMT tax issues and as well as work with you the timing, because if the timing is done correctly, those gains, that bargain element like we talked about before, is taxed at long-term capital gains tax rates instead of ordinary income tax rates. And for the highest income earners, that could be a savings of 18% or more in taxes.
I like the way you put it. It's best to work with a professional, especially since there's so many moving parts. And Paul, is it common for companies to offer multiple types of stock options for an employee?
Actually, it is quite common for employers to offer a combination of plans. Really, it's at their discretion. And the more senior the individual is, the more complex the stock options planning becomes. For most individuals, they get just RSUs. There's restricted stock units or a combination of restricted stock units and NSOs, those non-qualified stock options. The great thing here, though, is it is a negotiable benefit. So for any employee or a prospective employee, they should be aware of the benefits and try to help negotiate these options in a way that's going to be most beneficial for them.
Now, that's really a great thing for listeners to be aware of. I'm sure many of our listeners haven't even considered trying to negotiate their stock options.
Yeah, and as a financial planner, I've had the privilege of helping several clients over the years with this process of negotiating with employees, whether it's done at an annual review or when they've received an offer from a prospective employer. And the negotiation is really important to understand the tax implications and the future growth potential of the company to negotiate those in a way that's going to be favorable.
Okay, so stock options for a new employee, they sound attractive, but don't they tend to muddy the water in understanding the full value of a job offer?
When we're looking at a prospective employer and receiving a job offer, when you have stock options, it definitely makes it more difficult to understand the full value of that offer. It's not as straightforward as just the salary where you know the full benefit that you're receiving each year. With the stock options, it's important to understand the growth potential on the stock that you're looking at. Because if the company has strong potential to growth, that could be a massive boost to your overall net worth in the years to come. But if the company is struggling or the stock doesn't perform well, the stock options could have little to no value.
Well, in that kind of a situation, what would be some key things that one might want to consider?
If you find yourself in a position negotiating with a new employer, it's going to be important to understand your current benefits and your current company. This does become somewhat difficult if you have existing stock options with one company and you're receiving a stock options package from the new employer, because you may be leaving some money on the table if you make that switch, as some of those shares probably aren't vested. So it is really important to look at the total employment package and compare it with the current one. And look and see what's going to be best for you and your family over the long term. But it is important to note here, as I said, if you do switch from one stock option with one company to a stock option with a new company, that old employer, that former employer, any shares that are vested, you're most likely going to lose. And any vested shares that are not exercised, that are either ISOs or NSOs, if those are not exercised, you'll actually lose the benefit of those stock options as well. So if you're in the position where you are negotiating with another employer, it is key to talk with an advisor to make sure that you're understanding the full implications of the potential job change.
Well, those are definitely some good things to keep in mind, Paul. Any other considerations that our listeners should be aware of with stock options?
The last thing to discuss is the potential use and benefit of an 83B election. This has to be done at the time of grant, but if it is done, what happens is you're paying taxes now, but this can help by converting future growth into capital gains tax rates instead of being taxed at ordinary income tax rates. This is very beneficial and can be a great way to manage taxes on a highly appreciable security. There is a big risk to the strategy, though, that if the stock price declines, you may be paying unnecessary taxes. So for this to be an effective strategy, you need to consult, again, with a professional. In those cases where there's a highly appreciable asset or a highly appreciable security, it can be a very beneficial tool to use.
Well, while we couldn't cover every aspect of this topic today, I hope our listeners feel more informed on the topic, and I hope that you, the listener, will take the opportunity to listen to this again to brush up on your options about options, should you opt to take them.
Yeah, the stock options for many individuals can be quite overwhelming, especially if they're not managed correctly. Work with a professional and develop a proactive approach, something that's going to help minimize taxes and help you meet your financial objectives. So again, using that goals-based approach will help determine the best way to handle the timing and when and how to sell the stock options.
Well, Paul, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure our listeners do. A very, very informative explanation of how stock options work. Now, if you have stock options and would like to discuss these in detail with one of our financial consultants, please give us a call here at the office at 1-858-487-3939, and we'll be happy to make sure that you're on the right path, clear any of those clouds on a pretty involved topic. And on behalf of Paul Horn and myself, we do want to thank you for listening, and we hope you have a great rest of your week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any
any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.